Yay. We need to remember that hunger still exists in our city and that it is our ethical obligation to share. As the earth under our feet changes and we move through spring into summer, we think about what we're leaving behind and what new growth awaits us.
I've done. What a nice, easy winter we've had. I'm ready for my vacation in this hemisphere. Hardly had to work at all this winter. It was great.
Mr. Winter!
Well, kids. What's up?
You got into the office and you didn't live up to your champagne promises this year.
We made a petition and we all signed it. See? Somewhere in here. Yeah, it's on the bottom. There.
What is this? The camping movement there? What are you guys doing here? A movement against me.
We had no snow.
We didn't get to stomp the snow off our clothes
or throw snowballs
or go sledding. We want hot chocolate!
Oh, you're right. I didn't do a good job. I'm a failure. Nobody likes me. Oh, everybody hates me. I'm going to eat worms.
Not my worms, you don't.
Oh. Lord of the Forest, I can feel like a failure if I want to. I can do it in my own way.
Well, I'm afraid you have been a failure this year. It's hardly been cold at all. I've been working for weeks bringing up the new birds, the new animals, the new insects, getting the buds going, getting the flowers going. It's been exhausting. And you've been goofing off.
Oh, you're right. It's so terrible. I'll eat cold worms then.
Oh, no, you don't.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Oh. Excuse me.
It's Mother Earth.
It's Mother Earth.
Oh. Hi, Mother Earth.
Hello, children. How are you? Help me up. I'm 4 billion. I need a little help on the stairs these days. Boys, your cacophonous bickering is driving me batty. I'm very irritated with you. I understand that at this time in spring you both have some dominion, but you have to get along so that we can get some order out of this chaos so that can spring into summer grow.
Oh,
I guess I don't have to be mad at winter.
Yeah, and I guess I could go do better. I'll go down south of the equator and do better. I'll make a real winter down there.
And I suppose I can let go of being irritated with both of you.
Oh, well, perhaps you can help me by taking over and looking at the new things for a little while. I could take a nap so I can, like, release some of my fatigue.
Of course, dear.
Oh, yeah, but I still have that petition. They're still angry at me.
Well, I guess we could forgive Mr. Winter if we had lots of puddles and mud now this year.
I think I can arrange that.
Maybe we could blow some bubbles.
Bubbles?
Ah, I am the Lord of the new and growing things, and I understand about bubbles. Bubbles are cool. Bubbles let you take and release stuff. Get rid of your things like carbon dioxide and blues and jealousy and fear. And you just blow them out. And they go, poof.
Oh.
There are things I want to clean out and get rid of.
War. Maybe we could topple all the tanks.
I know. We could clean out all the stink bugs.
Oh, I hate those. Excuse me. I am Mother Earth, and I will receive whatever you release. I will take it in. Your irritation, your sense of failure. Stink bugs. Oh, I hate those. War's dicey, but I'll work on it. And over time, I will transform them to compost. And I will use their energy, scattering it here and there, to help make things grow. Is this an acceptable compromise?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Wonderful.
We know some other people who can bring order out of chaos.
Our teachers!
Oh, your teachers! Yes! Not that you guys are chaotic or anything, but your teacher, you know, I've been taking it easy all winter, but your teachers have been working very hard with you. And now that it's spring has come, and it's the end of the Sunday school year, they get to take it easy. But this would be a good time to thank them. How do you think we should do that?
They could go first in our procession.
Oh, yes, our traditional procession. We'll tell you how that works in a minute. But who are your teachers? Do you have a list? Oh, look at this. Oh my goodness, look at all this. I will call the teachers up, and Miss Carla and Miss Becky will help the children give them these beautiful decorative stars, and then the teachers can line up to lead our procession around the sanctuary, and I'll tell you how that works in a moment. But we'll get all set up here. And let me read, look at this list of names. These are people who've helped the kids all year. Evelyn Bradley. They might have started the vacation early. We'll find out. Here comes Evelyn. Melissa Liddick. Pat Montley. Adrian Tin. Michelle Bianchi. Caitlin Cross Barnett. Mike Cross Barnett. Kim Cunningham, Tina Diaz-Davis, Gelza Pemberton, Connie Phelps, Michael Preston, Kristen Seeberger, David Clements, Matt Herrick, Monica Hetrick, Kristen Humphrey, Dolores Miller, Sue Parr, Blake Porter, Natasha Rosinski, Janice Zimmerman, Cheryl Braggio, Karen Brown, Katie Davis, Lee Dix, Denise Gregory Wyatt, Tina Hooper, Kip Wyatt, Gina Foringer, Marta Mills, Hannah Roberts, Lloyd Allen, Tony Gregorio, Kathleen Flahive, Bess Lewis, Joan Lonergan, Jenny Milstein, Megan Parker, Carla Peterson, Molly Ruhlman, Grant Shreve, Maya Strauss, Melinda Walker, Laura Lang, Glenn Rieke. What a wonderful crew. Can we thank them? Oh, look at that. And you know, your name could be on this list next year, by the way. So here's what we'll do. The Lord of the Forest will read his traditional invocation to the spring. And afterwards, we'll start our processional. And there's scarves there. Some of your teachers might want to take some of those great banners on poles there at the end. And we'll process around the auditorium with musicians on the east side, around, down the center aisle, and back around again. And the kids will exit on that time. But I want everybody to join. You know, the success of the new season depends on everybody joining this processional. So you can come down the center aisles or join us on the side aisles as we pass you. And if you see folks here who are new, please invite them to join the processional, because this is absolutely key to having a wonderful spring. If it's not wonderful, we'll know who you are and why it's that way. So, the Lord of the Forest.
Lord of
Hey, come, dairy doll, hop along, my hearties. Children, grown-ups, friends and all, we are fond of parties. Now let the song begin. Let us sing together of stars, moon, sun and mist, rain and cloudy weather. Light on the budding leaf, dew on the feather, wind on the open hills, bells on the heather, reeds in the shady pools, lilies on the water. Old Earth's jolly friends and her sons and daughters. Now let us come up and process. Get your garlands, your noisemakers, and your banners. Spring and summer are coming in. Let our procession to greet them begin.
Yay, spring. Spring is truly a time for celebration. So much to celebrate about spring. I celebrate tulips, daffodils, warm breezes, daylight savings time, chocolate bunnies, the greening of trees, spring cleaning, That's right, I said it. I celebrate spring cleaning. Why celebrate cleaning? Often one of my biggest chores of spring cleaning is to clean the clutter, to let go of a lot of the junk I have let accumulate. In the ancient Chinese tradition of feng shui, it is believed that clutter actually traps our energy, our qi, our life force, our life energy. When we clear the clutter away and let go of what we no longer need, our energy is no longer trapped. Ever notice how good you feel after you clean that desk off? Another spring cleaning chore happens in our gardens, where we clean away and hopefully compost the brown dead remnants of the last growing season to make room for the new green shoots. Yoga practices often focus on cleansing breaths to remove toxins from our bodies. Deep breathing can also help relieve stress so we have more capacity to enjoy spring. It would be nice if spring happening was enough to help us with such cleaning. And boy, do I need some help. It's not that easy, though. So yes, spring is a great time to release, to let go, to clean the windows to your soul. And so we're going to think about that now.
I'm reading for Dorian Coulter, who is rejoicing at a graduation in his family today. I plan to live in my current house, fix it up, and sell it. Then the real estate market tanked. When I moved into the house, I had packed 6 to 10 boxes that had tons of stuff, but very little that was valuable. I just did not have the time to go through the things and throw out what was of no use to me. That means that in each box there are only 2 or 3 things that I really want to keep, and they're buried with a lot of things I plan to discard. I was planning on sorting the contents of the boxes when I did my final flip, but the bottom fell out of the real estate market. I can't sell at a profit, and I'm staying right here in my current home. I packed those boxes 12 years ago, and I have not yet unpacked them and located those things, those 2 or 3 things that I just want to keep. My basement is clogged with boxes, furniture, and just stuff that I can't make worthwhile use of in my basement. I've even added to the 12-year-old pile over the 8 years that I've lived here. At this point, the front half of the basement looks like, it looks so frightening that every time I think I need to sift this mess, I have failed to start. Just looking at it makes the task impossible. I suppose the only way I will climb that mountain is to just jump in and start, knowing that the task is manageable if I do it in small steps.
And so, to a certain extent, we're posing the problem here. Some years ago, I got a letter and a book from my brother. I think he was cleaning out some of his stuff. And it said, "Dear Alice, here's a book I think is really neat. I read it all at once the first time. I had X number of hours before the library closed to finish." Well, that's not quite true. I had to come back the next day to finish, and then I got another one. "I have saved it almost like a religious object, like, if I possess it, then I will have the information in it. I suppose that's reasonable, but having a book is different from having the information in it. Please enjoy. Love, Tom." The book is a paperback by John Lilly, and it was interesting. And I want you to know that I have kept the paperback and the letter almost like religious objects. It's as if possessing Tom's words and that piece of paper are like keeping the affection that we share in a form that's concrete. Don't be confused, my brother's alive. This is sort of like a reliquary, but I saw him last week. I think he's a little embarrassed that I still have the book and the letter. I also keep the paper to remind me of what he said. If I possess it, it's like I have the information in it, and I mentally add the affection and the beauty and the erudition that I would have that is contained in it. But having the book is different from having the information and the ideas and the affection and the love and the beauty in it. Okay, I have a house full of books that I have kept because I want to keep all of that stuff that's in them. And yes, sometimes they're books, so I can look back and I can extract it. And then there are the other books, the textbooks, the books from my profession before last, the histories that would make me as erudite as I would hope to become. Would that it stop there. I have clothes I think I'll fit into, camping gear, canoes, games, and piles of stationery. If she who dies with the most cloth wins, I'm in the running. So why can't I get rid of all this stuff? Do I want their contents to migrate inside of me, the erudition, the information, the knowledge, the beauty, the interior? Maybe it's just the potential for those things. Does that make any sense? So I had company coming. So I had to clean out my living room, and I wasn't feeling very good, and I felt kind of queasy, and I stayed up too late doing it. But, oh, the next day, it was so nice to walk through, and it was orderly, and I knew where things actually were. So now what I have to do is to remember that feeling for when I do that to the dining room, the basement, the spare bedroom, the attic, and the garage. Okay, here is the question. How do I know which books I want to get rid of? And how do I know which parts of my busy life I might want to drop so that new things can grow? And how do I know even which things I want to get rid of? I want to possess them all. All of it. All of it. And it's starting to possess me.
I, on the other hand, have discovered the greatest method for liberating myself from the clutter that keeps me from enjoying my life and being as productive as I want to be. It's called the contemplation of death. Now, it's not as grim as all that. This memento mori is really more life-affirming and liberating. To understand this, and to understand the helpfulness of my new motto, you have to understand my old motto, which was, I might be able to use that someday. This applied to scraps of wood and metal, screws of various sizes, some of them carefully sorted by head and shank style, length and purpose, in divided plastic boxes, and others just waiting in various containers to be sorted. This was closely allied to my environmentalist concern for keeping things out of the waste stream. It applied to documents, books, old course notes, that is, for courses that I took 50 years ago or courses that I taught 20 years ago. I still have all of these things. It applies to artifacts that my training as a historian tells me might be useful someday to some future historian as illustrating the period in which these documents were generated. Someone will be very happy to hear those sirens coming toward them. Some of these things might be important if they were pieces of the true cross or relics of a saint, but I think probably less so as relics of my life. Some are actually useful. I still have and use envelopes that were left over from when my parents closed their store back in Illinois in 1976. I cross out the old address and slap on an address label, and good as new, except maybe for the gum on the label. But I've also large ruled accounting sheets and big books with metal hinges to put these accounting sheets in that are also left over from my parents' business, even though I now use electronic spreadsheets. I have carbon paper. If I ever need it, I'm prepared. I see some of you have little nods of recognition there. That's what religion is to do. We talk from the pulpit and you recognize things from the pews. However, since I've recently given away my portable typewriter, which I probably hadn't used since the early 1980s, and thank you, Michael Cross Barnett, here for taking it, I don't have any use for carbon paper. Now, I know some of you don't even know what carbon paper is. That's okay. You don't need to know. It's all right. My new motto, "Would anyone want this after you die?" helps me live. It helps me ask, is this getting in the way of living? The city's Sisson Street recycling site helps me dispose of things with a good conscience. You know, goodbye, rusty nails. You're going to be reincarnated. My new motto frees my life. It's another way of asking those questions we should be asking ourselves all the time. Am I living the life I want to lead? Am I giving space to let my roots and branches grow? These are the things that we need to ask. By the way, if anyone has any use for a fine collection of empty plastic pill vials, please see me after the service.
So we need to get serious, too. Children are probably the quintessential example of planting and care and releasing and watching for new growth. We put such enormous energy into our children. And if you're one of the children, we put such enormous energy into you. We watch helpless babies and we make sure that heedless, mobile toddlers don't kill themselves, up through the academics and the social development of elementary school, and what can I say about the teen years? And watching them can be so rewarding. Not always, but often. Releasing them out into the world can be really painful. Someone suggested that we should have a support group for the mothers of college-bound children, and maybe we should. It's a grief that sneaks up on us that is releasing all of that time and energy and effort that we put into them. I've seen people who were subject to that grief who had children in their 40s who lived in the same town. We want them to grow and bloom. We want them to grow and bloom on their own. And then there's the other side. There's a sudden realization from a friend of mine in this community, and she provided this to me when I was taking my only daughter off to college and we were breaking up our little nuclear family. She said, "When we took the second one to school, I cried all the way home, and I cried for 2 days. And then I woke up and I thought, I have all this time. I can do all these things that I want to do. And I never looked back." And it's true. Much as we love them, we know, we hope, that it's true. We get to blossom too. And yet, it's a delicate balance, particularly when they have troubles. We don't want them dependent on us, immature, inexperienced, uncalloused, and we don't want to be dependent on them. Both of us need to have space and time to make our own decisions and struggles and to become fully human. Our physiology, our nature, the culture that we live in pushes us to release them. Sometimes it doesn't work real well, but it pushes us. doesn't make it easy, though. As we meditatively think about releasing things and people, and we'll get to ideas shortly, please sing hymn number 352, Find a Stillness, and remain sitting down and sing softly.
Good morning. I'm reading for Nola today. Can you hear me? All right. How about now? Can you hear me? Okay. One of Nola's great joys is permaculture course that she's taking. Her enthusiasm is so great, in fact, that she is graduating in it this morning rather than being here with us. She writes, one of the permaculture basic tenets is to allow nature to use everything, to make its closed loop more real, and for everything in it, animals, humans, plants, bugs, nematodes, bacteria, to share and transform everything. Garbage, excrement, old newspapers, even rain runoff. Cow poop, properly distributed and acted upon by flies, worms, and microbes, results in a lush lawn. Compost becomes tomatoes, corn, and beans. A fallen tree becomes a home for small animals and a nursery for new plants as termites clean up the mess. Much of our oxygen comes from microorganisms in the lakes and oceans. Water filled through swamps produces clean water. Some years ago, I read a new type of bacteria that is able to eat plastic trash bags. Not the kind that are meant to be biodegradable, but the regular kind, which are considered so bad for the environment. And they really are bad for the environment. But given enough time, nature comes up with a solution to munch up almost anything. Mother Earth is indeed a wizardess of transformation. So consider this. In our human way, we think of excrement as bad, dirty. We think of termites as a threat to our houses, and dead leaves and trees as litter. In our emotional lives, we think of anger, fear, and negative emotions as bad. We try to clutch on to happiness and love. That behavior rarely, if ever, results in contentment for us any more than paving over metal produces as a source of life. In many earth-based traditions, there are rituals for giving these negative energies back to Mother Earth so she can reuse them, just as she reuses our body waste, paper, and food trash. Today we are going to do our own version of such a ritual by blowing bubbles. Why bubbles? They are ephemeral like emotions. They have just the very little substance, and the rest is all air. They are beautiful and fragile like our lives. And these particular bubbles require our breath and a gentle effort to come into being.
Give this a try. Let it go. Why can't you just let it go? Kathleen, could you please just let it go? Wow, if I had a dollar for every time I heard those words from my mom and dad, I would be a wealthy woman. As a teen, I held on to every disappointment, broken promise, and perceived wrong. I was like a dog with a bone. My personal sense of justice demanded that I cry, complain, and or yell about any unfair thing happening to or around me. Boy, do I wish I had outgrown that. As the years went on, I continued to hold on to many hurts and disappointments. I tortured myself over bad choices, missed opportunities, or any mistake I might make. I knew I could not behave as I had in my teens. I tried to hold it all in, and I think it festered into anger, guilt,
and worry. So how did I cope with all this yucky, junky clutter swirling around inside me? Well, I threw myself into work that I loved. I kept busy, and I developed a circle of friends, and I tried talk therapy. So life was okay. I often had a good time, and I really tried to be that super positive, cheerful, easy, happy-go-lucky, happy, happy person that I so longed to be. But it seemed that I always fell a little short and was never truly happy. Then, 14 years ago, I met the most wonderful woman, Julie. I soon realized that this is it. This is my chance at true happiness. That my dream of a happy home, you know, the one with the white picket fence and all the kitty cats, was actually coming true. And we were very happy. We were. And then I started hearing those dreaded words, let it go. Why can't you just let it go, Kathleen? Our arguments increased. Julie began to worry about how much I worried, and I stressed out about everything, including her. So I realized I had to do something to change this destructive pattern. I returned to therapy. We worked on deep breathing, on using my breath to relax, to release the stress, to release, to let go of what may be bothering me or worrying me or irritating me. Breath, the very essence of our life, and deep, slow breathing is inexpensive and quite available. My amazing therapist taught me some meditation techniques, which again is all about the breath. We used imagery as a way of letting things go. I see and feel a healing wave of blue-green energy washing over me and taking away any unwanted debris with the tide. We focused on the benefits of laughing and doing things that bring us joy, that keep us here in the here and now, in the moment, rather than regretting the past or worrying about things that haven't even happened yet. As I worked to release all that yucky stuff, I really had more room for joy and started truly enjoying life's simple gifts, gardening, a child's laughter, taking walks with Julie, and of course, stopping to smell the roses. One day, I was blowing bubbles for my kitties. I love blowing bubbles. They make me laugh and they bring me joy. Then it occurred to me, maybe part of the reason I enjoy bubbles so much is because when I blow bubbles, I'm taking that deep breath and then I'm releasing it to blow the bubble. Now, watching the bubbles dance in the sunlight is pretty cool, too. So I started thinking, why not use the bubbles to intentionally release some of my cares or worries or to share my newfound joy with the universe? I tried it. It was good. It felt great. It works best when I take a deep breath, and then as I blow out, I focus very specifically on what I want to release, actually naming it. I let go of the irritation I feel from my phone conversation with my sister Gloria. Shh. Poof. It's gone. Released to the universe. I try to use these tools, these gifts regularly, and when I do the work, they work. And you're going to have a chance to try it a little later out on the portico. So is everything perfect now? No, but my journey is a much happier one, and I know that Julie is happier too. And my capacity to grow, to love, and enjoy life has increased. So are deep cleansing breaths magical? Uh-uh. So are bubbles a miracle? Like it says right here on the label, miracle bubbles? Not hardly. But this I know. With my focus and intentionality to release, to let go of all that junk that clutter my spirit, I am one breath closer to healing. I am one breath closer to wholeness. I am one bubble closer to joy.